They run the clock ahead on me. Caught me off guard. Are we back? Oh, there we are. You know, sometimes things just don't work out quite perfect. Have you ever noticed that? You've never had that problem, have you? You ladies, you've never had a cake fall. If you've baked more than 3, you've probably had 1 fall. That's okay. Some of us like fallen cakes because that means they're gooey. I used to like them more than I do now. It's hard for me to eat gooey stuff now, but since my surgery. But I never got upset if Susan had a cake to fall or if my mom did, because that meant I got it all, and that was good. Last week, we started a small series from Revelation on the hoofbeats on the horizon, and we covered just the first horse that was a part of those hoofbeats. So if you would turn in your Bibles to the book of Revelation chapter 6, we're going to read verses 1-8 this week, and maybe we can get through the fourth horse. John is writing, and he said, I watched as the Lamb opened the first of the 7 seals. See, John was fearful that there was nobody worthy to open the seals that was on the scroll. And then the Lamb of God steps up. Of course, we know that is Jesus himself. And he begins to open one seal at a time. And he is the only one who is worthy to do so. So he's writing, I watched as the Lamb opened the first of the 7 seals. Then I heard one of the 4 living creatures say in a voice like thunder, come. I looked, and there before me was a white horse. Its rider held a bow, and he was given a crown, and he rode out as a conqueror bent on conquest. When the Lamb opened the 2nd seal, I heard the 2nd living creature say, come. Then another horse came out, a fiery red one. The rider was given power to take peace from the earth and to make people kill each other. To him was given a large sword. Instead of large, they put a great sword. And I like that interpretation better than a large sword, but both of them fit the context, and we'll touch on that. When the Lamb opened the 3rd seal, I heard the 3rd living creature say, come. And I looked, and there before me was a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. Then I heard what sounded like a voice coming from the 4 living creatures saying, 2 pounds of wheat for a day's wage, and 6 pounds of barley for a day's wage, and do not damage the oil and the wine. When the Lamb opened the 4th seal, I heard the voice of the 4th living creature say, come. I looked, and there before me was a pale horse. The rider was named Death, and Hades, or hell, was following close behind him. They were given power over a 4th of the earth to kill by sword and famine and plague and wild beast of the earth. Now, the previous chapters to this sixth chapter showed the splendors and the glory and the worship in heaven. The first chapters were talking to the churches, and then it went to those scenes in heaven. It was awesome. It was splendorous. But all of a sudden, this sixth chapter just burst open. And it's a shock to read and to see some of the things that are going to happen during the time of the tribulation. Most of it takes place kind of toward the center of the 7 years, right about the 3.5, where it kind of does a flip. And we'll discuss that. So we are about to examine a scene filled with pain and suffering. That tribulation period is not a joyous time. It's not a time that you want to be around for. Jeremiah 30, verse 7 says, "Alas for that great day, there's none like it. It is even a time of Jacob's trouble, but he will be saved out of it." Daniel, in his brief description of that moment, says, "At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. There will be a time of distress such as not happened from the beginning of nations until now." So that tells me it's going to be pretty rough. "But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered." And then Jesus himself, describing that opening moment, says, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this very time, no, or never shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there would be no flesh saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." What Jesus is really saying is that these horsemen that ride out from the seals, and then the trumpets that follow, and then the bowls that follow, in each case, they are set on destruction and death. And if the days were not shortened, he says, there would be no flesh, no life would be saved. The last days, I've been asked, are we living in those days? And when you ask those questions, people are very careful of who they ask it of, because a lot of people will laugh and scoff and make fun of you. But according to Joel, the book of Joel, and the book of Acts, and what's written there, I believe that we are in the last days, because the Lord said, "I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh in those last days." And he has done that. And Paul and Timothy begins to describe those last days in 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 5 on the original outline. It was a misprint. I didn't put down the right verse, but it's 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 5. It says, "But mark this, there will be terrible or perilous times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof. And then he adds that last little caption there where he says, have nothing to do with such people. That sounds very familiar to those who are living today. The seals, as they are open, it begins to reveal even 10 times worse than what's going on today. And it's what's described in many places within the Word. That first seal was opened in the horse of deception, and its rider, many take to be Jesus, but it is not Jesus, it is the Antichrist. And he goes out as a conqueror bent on conquering, or goes out as a conqueror to conquer many. The man riding that horse has no mercy, has no justice, has no love. He goes out as a man of peace, but it's all a lie. It's a ruse that he's pulling upon the leadership of the earth. It's not a time that you want to be around and see that. He's given a crown by the leadership of the world, because they'll fall at his feet and worship him. He's got them snowed. He's got them fooled. He has a bow, but he has no arrows. So all the conquering that he's going to do, he's going to do it without firing a shot. He's going to do it by sleight of hand, by fooling people. They think that he's a man of peace. He's got answers to all the problems. Daniel chapter 9 verse 27 says, he will confirm a covenant with many for 1 7, or for 7 years. In the middle of the 7, he will put an end to the sacrifice and the offering. And at the temple, he will set up an abomination that causes desolation until the end that is decreed is poured out on him. We know that in the middle of those 7 years, the 7 years of tribulation, that's the covenant that he enters into. It's those 7 years of the tribulation time. Right in the middle, he will walk into the restored temple in Israel. He's going to walk through and sit down on the mercy seat between the cherubim, and he's going to proclaim himself God, thereby defiling the mercy seat, the altar of incense, everything that's in the Holy of Holies, the Ark of the Covenant. It's all going to be defiled. There'll be all sacrifices eliminated because of that defiling. He's a man of power. He rides out conquering. He's given that crown. The crown that was denied to Jesus when he was on earth will be given to the Antichrist. But he's a man of pretense. So that brings us to the second horse. And that's where we start quickly today. It's the red horse of destruction. Point 2. Revelation 6 verses 3 and 4 says, when the Lamb opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, come. Then another horse came out, a fiery red one. The rider was given power. Who gives power? Only God. So God gives this rider power to take peace from the earth and make people kill each other. It's going to be a time of war. To him was given a large in the NIV or great. King James Version, New King James Version, the Amplified Version, all have great or terrible. The Phillips or the Darby translation. So the sword is large, it's great, it's terrible, because it's a sword of war. It's a sword of taking peace away from the earth. So the second rider, that red horse, red is the color of fire, but it's also the color of blood. Fire has the power to devour and destroy. And when those fires of war are unleashed upon the earth, there's going to be bloodshed on an unprecedented level. We've never seen anything like that. The seal unleashes a time of war such as the world has never, ever known. World War I, World War II, and all the other conflicts that have taken place, they're not even a drop in the bucket compared to this. War literally breaks out all over the world. That peace that was instituted by the Antichrist was short-lived. Of course, this is what Jesus said was going to happen in Matthew 24, 6 and 7. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. He also warns men not to put much stock in the cries of peace. Peace. He says there'll be no peace. That peace that they're bantering about, especially the politicians, the rulers of the world, they will go around calling peace, 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 peace. But 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 3 says, while the people are saying peace and safety, destruction comes on them suddenly, like labor pains on a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. Can you imagine? Just imagine for a moment a world that knows no peace. None at all. You can't lay your head down on your pillow at night and have peace about waking up tomorrow. There will be fear that you won't make it through the night. There will be fear of what's going to happen tomorrow. There's going to be conflict everywhere, even in the streets. In every corner of the globe, violence and war will rage. In every major city around the world, there's going to be battles, destruction. That is the world that every lost sinner will face during the tribulation. The church, the bride of Christ, the true Christian will be gone, caught away in rapture in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. There's a change going to take place, and we're going to rise to meet him in the air. And then the tribulation will begin. Oh, there's going to be a lot of people saved. There's going to be a revival that is unbelievable in the first stages of the tribulation. But that's going to wear away very quick. And then it's going to be dog eat dog. And literally, there's going to be a struggle to even survive. The planet is brutalized. That red horse rider is given that great, that large, that terrible sword. That word great refers to the extent of the war that's going to take place also. It's going to be worldwide in scope. And the word sword refers to like that short sword that Roman soldiers used to take it with them. It's very, very effective and very deadly. It's used in hand-to-hand combat. It will put the enemy to death. When Antichrist first steps up onto the world stage, he's going to be hailed as a man of peace, a man of honor, a man of wisdom. He's going to be accepted by most as King of Kings, the Messiah. Israel will look at him as their Messiah. That worldwide sweep of the hand is going to be to worship him. But suddenly, something changes. After he is given power, after he is made King of Kings over all the earth, ruler, nobody else will rise to his heights in the eyes of the leadership of the world. But suddenly, he demands absolute power. And he displays his true colors. After men allow him a place of prominence and power, and he grabs that absolute power, when that happens, there's going to be some countries, some powerful countries in this world that's going to rebel. They're going to see through it. And the world will experience war on a scale that has never been seen before. The forces of the Antichrist that he has amassed, those that are rebelling against him, must be eliminated. And they're going to clash. And that red horse is riding right in the middle of that clash. Nothing like this has ever been witnessed before. No holds barred. Every nuclear force can be used. Every tactic of battle, fair or unfair, will be used. During the Second World War, 50 million people died. Worldwide. 50 million. That is a huge number. But that number will fall so short of what's going to take place during this war, these battles, during the wars that rage in that period of time called the tribulation. It's during that time that Russia, months and months ago, when Russia seemed to be moving toward peace, on a Wednesday night, standing right here. I said, keep your eyes on Russia. It's going to come back. And then Putin came in, and the rest is history. And now it's a troublemaker around the world. But at this time, Russia begins to gather her allies around her. And that bear from the north is going to set its sights on the destruction of Israel. Ezekiel chapter 38, verses 1 through 6 in the New King James Version. Now the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face against Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshech, Tabul, and prophesy against him and say, Thus says the Lord God, Behold, I am against you, O God, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tabul. I will turn you around and put hooks in your jaw and lead you out with all of your armies and horses and horsemen, all splendidly clothed, a great company with bucklers and shields, and all them handling swords. Persia, Ethiopia, Libya are with them, and all of them with shields and helmets. Gomer and all of its troops, the house of Togarmah from the far north, and all of its troops. Many people are with you, and they're coming against Israel. Iran, Ethiopia, Libya, Turkey, they're a part of that conglomerate. Most of the Islamic nations are a part of that conglomerate. Germany, Gomer, march against Israel, who just signed a treaty with that new leader of the EU. So Germany's going to have a falling out with the EU. The Antichrist is going to be appointed leader of that world government. All of them are coming against Israel. So that means that they're coming, this battle of Gog and Magog, they're coming against the Antichrist also, because part of the treaty is the Antichrist will take up for Israel. These events took place, will take place after the rapture of the church. I tried to make sure, I spent about 4 hours just making sure that my timeline and the events lined up. So it takes place after the rapture of the church, because chapter 37 of Ezekiel deals with the restoration of Israel that happened back in 1947. Chapter 40, now that's chapter 37. Chapter 40 deals with the millennial age. So somewhere between chapter 37 and chapter 40 is where this takes place. Chapter 38, twice, two different times, in verse number 8 and in verse number 16. It mentions a word, latter, meaning far in the future, at toward the end of time, that time. Verse 8 says, in the latter years. Verse 16 says, in the latter days. So there's a progression that's there also, from years to days. So it must have taken place during that 70th week of Daniel. Because that's the tribulation time. It had to take place after the treaty with the prince that shall come, Daniel 9:27. So we're beginning to narrow down this battle of Gog and Magog. It comes during the last 7 years, or the 7 years of tribulation. It comes after the church is raptured. It comes before the millennial. So somewhere in this 7 years, and it says that in the middle of it is when he's going to walk into the temple. So he's already signed by the time we get to the middle of the tribulation period. So this battle must take place somewhere right around the middle, after the first 3.5 years, before the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period. The army of Russia, they will march in there with millions of people against a little nation not much bigger than New Jersey. They are set on annihilating, wiping off the map Israel and all of its people. They will march from the north, so they will come straight down. Get an atlas and look. And that army of Russia with all that are with him are going to be defeated in the mountains of Israel, which is in the northern part, somewhere up around the Golan Heights. There's going to be divine intervention. Not a shot fired. God's going to take care of it. He said, can God do that? Yeah, God can do that. Furthermore, he's going to do that. First, there's going to be an earthquake. The earth is going to open up. And the armies are going to fall into it. You say, has that ever happened before? Yeah. When Moses was being resisted by Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and they said, you don't have a right to rule over us. And God said, Moses, get away from their tent. I'm going to settle this thing once and for all. And Moses said, God's going to do a new thing. So watch this. And suddenly the ground opened up, and just those tents and just those families fell down alive into hell, it said. Well, God's going to do it a second time. He's never done it again. But he's going to do it a second time when Russia and all of its armies start marching toward Israel to destroy it in the middle of the tribulation period. Then they're going to turn on each other, these nations that are with Russia, Gog and Magog. And they're going to start killing each other instead of Israel. You say, has that ever happened before? Oh, yeah. When Gideon and the Midianites, go back and read the story in Judges about Gideon. They killed themselves, and Gideon and his army didn't have to do anything. Then there's going to be raining fire and brimstone like hail down upon them. Now, these armies don't have a chance. I mean, the earth is gobbling some of them up. They're killing each other on the other hand. And then those that are watching, all of a sudden, fiery hail starts falling from heaven and burning them up. You say, has that ever happened before? Yeah, Sodom and Gomorrah. So those kinds of things God is going to use against this army. You can read it in chapter 38 of Ezekiel. And Israel will burn the weapons of their warfare for 7 years. That's how vast that army was that was coming against them. That's in Ezekiel chapter 39, verses 9 and 10. The conflict doesn't end there, though. The wars that were spawned by the Antichrist will continue to rage one after the other until Jesus comes back. That Prince of Peace will return and bring peace once again to the earth. Imagine for a moment, if you would, a world that is so totally consumed by war, conflict, hatred. No love. No compassion. Things that you and I take for granted. You know, sometimes when you're in a store or something and somebody bumps into you, most of the time they'll say, excuse me, not during this time. They will hurt you on purpose. Nations will fight nations. People will fight people. Race wars, they're going to rage. Class wars, nobody has a hope. Religious wars, they will abound. They will be everywhere. Peace will be absolutely elusive. Not 1 second's peace. Mom, you remember those days when the kids went crazy? And there was yelling and screaming and fighting all over the house. How it made you on edge. The whole world is going to be on edge. It's going to be the most unlivable period that mankind has ever faced. And the world is ripe for such a event right now. There's another factor we have to add. We add to all that I've just said that there's not going to be any mothers or fathers or churches. It's going to be bowing down and crying out to God for those that are going to war. In every conflict that there's been some mama, some wife, some church that's called the name of some of the guys that have, and ladies that have gone to war. And those that had faced the enemy and the bullets were flying, many have said, I could feel the prayers from back home. There's not going to be any of that. There's not going to be any preachers on the face of this earth carrying the gospel to dying men in foxholes. There won't be a chaplain who'll open his little white New Testament. This will be a time of war fought without God. This will be a time of life lived without God, without Jesus, without hope. every soldier killed in every conflict in this shattered world will leave the world in tribulation to spend an eternity in hell. There'll be no hope of heaven. Can you imagine such a moment? It beggars description. There's no way that I can make it like I feel it, like I see it. All I can say, friend, if you're sitting in here or if you're watching online, if you don't know Jesus, now's the time. Say, well, I'll wait till just before the rapture. No, you won't know when it's going to take place. And you might not be accepted at that time. Because no man comes unto the Father unless the Spirit draws him. There's an appointed time. Today is the day of salvation. If you're away from God, if your heart is cold, if you've lost the spark, now is the time to rekindle that fire. Come back to God. Get close to Him. Because there's a time coming when this world is going to be absolutely bereft of anything godly or grace or mercy or love. Bow your heads with me, would you please, for a moment? Father, what we've